Oh shit, I gotta go to a meeting. I'm late. This is the Token CEO podcast. I'm your host. This is Erica Nardini. It's April 28th, Tuesday, day 43 of quarantine. This episode is brought to you by the Nardini Run Club, which is kind of fun to say. If there is still any left, you can go to store.barstoolsports.com and buy a bunch of running gear. We've got windbreakers, we've got sports bras, long sleeve running shirts, short sleeve running shirts, dad hats, you name it. So go check it out. It's at store.barstoolsports.com. Today we're doing another deep dive and we're going to talk about digital media publishers, why it is that digital media publishers are getting screwed. You know us, we love to go up against the competition as much as anybody, but I think it's important to take a step back and look at what's happening in the internet and what's happening with internet media companies, because a lot of the things that are happening are not specific to any one player or any one platform. Barstool Sports is a digital media company in terms of our business model. We also are a lot of other things, which makes us more resilient in a time like this. But I also think it's important to look at what's happening and why it's happening, because it shows way bigger forces at work than necessarily just eyeballs and content. I'm going to roll it back before we get into how all digital publishers are getting fucked. So first thing I think people need to understand is that one of the beauties of traditional media was how controlled the distribution was and how simple the business model was. There were a certain number of cable TV networks, there were a certain number of broadcast television networks, there was a certain number of newspapers. All of those businesses had the same monetization. They made most of their money from advertising dollars, and then they made the rest of their money from a subscription business. So if you look at, in the case of newspapers, you got your newspaper delivered to you every morning, or you bought it off the rack for a higher price. That newspaper had advertisements in it, and they took your money to get it delivered or to pay to have it in your pocket. The business model of traditional media was as clean as the distribution, and both are to say they were very finite. Every single business or brand in each one of those sectors generally had the same business model. So there was a ton of conformity and a ton of uniformity. What I love about the internet is the internet comes trotting along and it's not linear and it's not conformist, and it opened up a ton of new business models, and brands that are similar to one another or dissimilar to one another, built on the same type of code, based on the same type of platform, can have radically, radically different business models. As everybody started to figure out the internet, what they realized is that the internet isn't their core business. Like in the mid-2000s, when you looked at a media buy, there was this fascinating study done. An RFP is a request for proposal. So when an advertiser wants to advertise with a television company, they send out one RFP. The hit rate on that RFP is 1-to-1. Typically, every broadcast or cable media company, when they get an RFP, they're going to get a sale. So it's super efficient. You have a high degree of certainty, easy, good transaction. When you got to print media, it was a 5-to-1. So for every 5 RFPs that were sent out, one company was chosen, which really also isn't that bad of odds. Like, you knew who you were competing with. You were competing with a finite amount of companies, and you had a pretty good certainty, or you had a 20% chance that you were going to get the sale from answering that RFP. When you got to newspaper, it was a little bit bigger than magazine. And then when you got to the internet companies, and I used to be a media buyer, so we would see this all the time, the ratio was like 100-to-1, because media was so fragmented. And so you had sales forces, you had all this infrastructure trying to respond to these RFPs, and you had a 1 in 100 chance of getting the sale. So what publishers started to realize was, ugh, this ad business is going to be a very arduous business. There was a ton of tracking. There was a low degree of certainty on winning the business. There was no uniformity amongst all the creative units. So what publishers started to realize is to make money from advertising in the internet was going to be a way more cost and labor intensive game. It was going to have a far lower win rate percentage. And it was ultimately, paraphrasing this, going to be a way bigger pain in the ass. So basically, when companies, the big social media platforms came along, or the big search engines came along, what publishers saw was frankly a way out of a business problem that they already had, which was, oh, you can streamline this process for me. I'm going to put my content on your platform, or I'm going to make it discoverable on your platform, and you're going to take care of the monetization. What all these other companies, the Condé Nasts of the world, the Hearsts of the world, the BuzzFeeds, what those guys were all doing was hitching their wagon to Facebook and Google Star, right? I was part of a company called Demand Media. We built a whole business by basically being a content farm that made content that we could put Google AdWords in and make millions and millions and millions of dollars. What Condé Nast and Viacom and Hearst and other companies were doing is, whereas they were formerly making a dollar when people came to their own websites to read content or watch content or listen to content, what they found was that wasn't their core business to begin with. Those were typically magazine companies. And what they saw was a promise from Facebook and from Google that if these companies made their content more readily discoverable on platforms, there would be a guaranteed stream of revenue. Google and Facebook would take on all of the advertising, and all the publisher had to do was to make their content perfect for Facebook or perfect for Google. One is, publishers started to compete with new players and new players who were created for those platforms themselves. And then the second thing that publishers saw was that the platforms really wanted very specific things, and they told everyone that the same things that they wanted. And so what people started to create was all of the same thing. And the differentiation and the point of view and the brand voice and the loyalty to the source and the brand itself started to go away. You know, one of the things I always loved that Dave says is, you know, when companies would approach him and say, I can get you 10,000 clicks, or I can get you 100,000 page views. Dave would always do the math in his head and say, I'm trying to sell t-shirts, and 100 people is way better than 10,000 clicks or 100,000 page views. And my business is built on making content for 100 people. And that was really a guiding principle for him that kind of stewarded the growth of Barstool, and is in large part what has set Barstool up for what it is today. But unlike Dave, a lot of other publishers said, yeah, I want the 100,000 page views. I want the 10,000 clicks. I want to syndicate my content to be found everywhere and anywhere so that I can make more money, that there's more volume. But in the end, it really ended up being less. And then you flash forward however many years, and we're in the middle of a pandemic. So it was a trying time for media to begin with. And now when you look at what's happening, you're starting to see, where are all the pieces and how are the people going to pick up the pieces that not only have been created by a massive global problem, a complete shutdown in this case of the US economy, but also a complete dependency on third-party platforms for revenue. I have a lot of empathy for the decisions that were made, why those decisions were made, and the situation that publishers are left in. And basically, when I look at that, here's what I see is that, you know, what are publishers left with? Publishers are left right now with traffic being up, right? Media is having a golden age in terms of consumption. People cannot spend enough time. They're literally spending all day on the internet. Views are up, traffic is up, but yet there's no business model behind them. You know, we're obviously seeing a big boom in traffic. Every television cable network is seeing a boom in traffic. But what's hard is the monetization isn't there, right? But now media companies have, you know, some really good things happening in that they're having more traffic than ever, but a really big business problem in that their direct revenue is cratering. I think there was a survey fairly recently, like almost 80% of publishers are saying brands are canceling campaigns. The challenge is, now in a pandemic, traffic and eyeballs and attention may be up, but the business isn't there. So the direct revenue has cratered. Most publishers have far more programmatic revenue than they have direct revenue. Programmatic revenue means that someone else monetizes your inventory through a bunch of machines. And this is like the most unsophisticated way to say it, but for the sake of this podcast, is that you basically hand off your revenue to a bunch of bots. There's a marketplace that's created and it's all run technologically. It's all based on performance. It's actually quite interesting and sophisticated. That's for a different day. But the vast majority of publisher revenue is programmatic. Programmatic CPMs, I want to say, are down 40 to 50%. So if you were banking on making your quarterly revenue numbers based on programmatic revenue, you are one half of the way there that where you thought you were going to be. The next thing that's happening is basically Facebook and Google have their lowest rates in their entire history. And that's both fill rates, so that's how many ads they can produce, and also how much each ad costs. So to go back to the original problem, that if an advertiser is looking to advertise right now and they want to do it through very standard banners or pre-roll, which is video, they're going to go to Facebook and Google versus going to a publisher because the rates have never been lower. The capability has never been bigger or better. So for the publishers who sought to diversify their revenue model by moving into commerce, the easiest way to do that was affiliate. A lot of fashion companies do this. Business Insider has a really big affiliate business, and they've done an amazing job with it. But affiliate is when you're writing articles or you're putting links on your page that encourage consumers to buy specific products. Amazon is one of the biggest affiliate companies on the planet. They're in the same boat where they're cutting off affiliate payments to publishers. So now if you have an affiliate business that you were banking on, in addition to your advertising, direct or programmatic business, that's also in the shitter. If you look at what's happening now and what's going to happen in the future, you know, presuming that this lasts for any length of time, is that every single publisher is hit by a loss of revenue. They're not hit by the loss of one single type of revenue. They're being hit by programmatic revenue, direct revenue, event revenue, subscription revenue, affiliate revenue, like you name it, the digital publisher is getting clobbered. So I think something like 98% of publishers are expecting a decrease in revenue in 2020. Like that sucks. Big, big digital media companies are laying off their staff. I think BuzzFeed said that they're cutting staff pay by as much as 25%. Companies who had big aspirations of being cash flow positive are not going to hit those goals this year. So basically, it's a tough time in general for a lot of different sectors. But what's interesting about digital media is how many different parts of a publisher's ecosystem are being affected, and really how the things that a publisher chased for the last 10 years are the things that are now really creating a lot of that demise. All right, so I'm an optimist, and I always hate when we have one of these episodes where I'm like, the world is falling and this is never going to work out. But basically, if you were to say, what can people do? You have to believe if the best scientists in the world and the best public health people in the world are putting their heads together to figure out coronavirus, like we're going to figure something out. I kind of feel like the same thing is true in digital media. I'm not saying it's nearly as sophisticated or as complicated or as political, but I think there's a couple big things that publishers can and will do to become more viable in the future. So first thing is just to become smaller. Get smaller and get back to who you were in the first place. I always say this and it sounds Pollyanna, but I really believe that all that matters is brand. If you have something that people care about, they will help you. In the purest sense, they will help you. They'll stick with you. They'll support you. They'll be loyal to you. The value exchange between who you are, what you have, and what your audience wants becomes so, so pure. So like, more than anything, I think media has this opportunity with so many more eyeballs and so much more time spent on content, which is such a luxury, right? Before we got into coronavirus, everyone would talk about the attention economy and how no one had any time and no one has any attention span. And now all anyone has is time and attention. But the opportunity for publishers is to basically use this time to build your brand and to take advantage of all those new people who are looking at you to say something and stand for something. I think the second thing is if you type in a URL right now, you type in a content URL, and even like we have, I think in some days we could do a way better job of this ourselves, is that you're met with a fuck ton of ads, right? There's like a pop-up here. There's an autoplay video. Like I find half the time that I type in a publisher URL, I can't even get to the content by virtue of how many ads are all over the page. And typically you see this towards the end of a month or the end of a quarter when a publisher really needs money. I kind of think like, hey, if that stuff's not really working for you now anyways, and it's one half or one quarter or one tenth of what it used to be, get rid of it, right? Is now a time when the money is bad to really think about how you make the consumer experience better. Now's a good time to basically figure out if you want them to come to you direct because you have something to say and they want to hear what you have to say. My hope in this episode was to share more context for what I see happening. I don't think I have it 100% right. I probably oversimplified it a lot here, but I think if you care about advertising, if you're into content, if you're interested in the internet, if you like media, having an understanding of how we got here and what does it look like and my two cents on where we go, hopefully that's at least somewhat interesting and something that people can take away from that. We're figuring things out as we go. And I think every business and every optimist has the chance to do so too.
Same as it ever was. Same as it ever was. Same as it ever was. Same as it ever was.
All right. So my one fucking good thing today is someone named Coach HP. So if you have a chance, check him out. You can follow him on Instagram. You can find him on Twitter. He calls himself a storyteller. He's a multimedia reporter. He knows a ton about baseball. He worked in the casino and the club business. And I've seen him like in my follows for a little bit. He wrote me a DM and I wrote him back and he was like, hey, do you want to come on my podcast? And so this morning I was like, yep, I definitely want to come on your podcast. And I did my podcast today with Hector. So I just want to give the visual of it, which is we did the podcast. He's got these awesome tattoos everywhere, like very cool tattoo set, wearing a Hawaiian shirt. He's got his logo in the background. He's printed out an 11 by 16 paper with the token CEO logo. The other side, he's got the Nardini Running Club. Like he like completely zhuzhed it up and was so positive. Like I felt like so much energy after our conversation. I'm excited for the episode to come out. But mostly I just felt like in a time like this, having someone with Hector level energy was just a fucking good thing. So that's my one fucking good thing today. If you missed yesterday's episode, we did a deep dive on hiring. That was pretty funny. There's definitely a ton of stories here about how people got into Barstool. So there's more opportunity for the hiring conversation. Tomorrow, we have a very special guest. We have Wallow267, so star of Million Dollars Worth of Game. I'm excited for him to come on. And I think he has a very unique perspective on this time and what he's doing with it and what he accepts of it and what he doesn't. You can follow me at EKA Nardini and you can follow us at Token CEO. And don't forget to subscribe, download, rate, and review. We appreciate it. And then if you get a chance, go to the Barstool store. Thanks so much, and we'll see you tomorrow.